Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Wednesday, December 18th, 2013, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. We've got a number of headlines to just take note of before we get into the program. Apparently, and this is on the lighter side, then perhaps not so light if you really think about it, there has been, as there always seems to be, an incident at Christmas that's particularly nauseating for many Americans on the progressive side of the fence. Apparently, a teacher, I believe in Missouri, he told an African-American student that Santa Claus is white, and therefore the student was not allowed to wear a Santa Claus hat to school. Excuse me, it was in New Mexico that this was reported. The teacher now, of course, is beginning to to feel perhaps his or her own Santa hat a bit too tight around the old cranium after those remarks. Moving right along, and this, as always, it seems to be symptomatic of the season, moving along, a plan to remove the OR7, Oregon's perhaps most notable, most famous wolf, is going to be removed from the endangered species list and thus lose protection. Gray wolves are of course, they're endangered, and whether the federal government sees fit or not to make any proclamations, either pro or con, nonetheless, of course, the gray wolf is endangered. It would leave state officials, this decision, with management responsibility for the recovering predator. And police arrested 16 protesters late Monday night. Activists locked themselves to disabled vehicles in front of the Megalode, Tar Sands Megalode, near John Day. Megalode has been delayed numerous times, they said, by protesters and by weather. But hey, let's face the facts. It's delayed because it's a megalode. It's too big for the roads. And a terminal to export nearly 9 million tons of coal annually that was proposed for the port of Morro at Boardman. But as it turns out, and this was the same pattern as with liquefied natural gas, in Asia, coal prices are tanking. So some of these export projects are not looking quite as financially exciting and sexy as they originally appeared to be. Moving farther afield, Russia's parliament today has amended an amnesty bill to include the 30-member crew of the Greenpeace ship Rainbow Warrior detained after a protest at a floating oil rig in the Arctic. Much news about the fate of the protesters. The fate, actually, of the Arctic, the seas up there, is perhaps of equal or greater concern. So many lives depend on those waters. We don't realize that they're part of an enormous global system. And if that's killed by an enormous oil spill, we'll be all of us are going to be feeling that one. And there won't be any amnesty for any of us or the rest of the ecosystem. Moving into the weather for around Cascadia, rain showers likely today, and we could even see brief snow flurries, highs around 44, not much in the way of wind. And for tonight, again, chance of rain and snow, areas of freezing fog, and a low around 31. Not much again in the way of winds, 5 to 9 miles per hour, northwest winds out of the northwest. And for tomorrow, areas of freezing fog early on. Then that could burn off with a high of around 39. You can't really call a high of around 39 enough to burn much of anything off, but there it is, calm winds. And for tomorrow night, rain later in the evening, overcast skies, lows around 33, and that's it for your regular conventional forecast. The alternative forecast is back today, full force. The moon is couldn't be 15 days old. It's a flower moon in Gemini full moon. Now's a good time for root vegetables. If you are thinking of getting out there at all, the biodynamic outlook notes that with the moon in Gemini, it's an air sign. Good time for flowering plants. And the moon in Gemini from the sidereal side of things, they say barren and dry, good time for promoting flower growth. Interesting. People that do work year-round in this field, no pun intended, of course, take note of sometimes they do, of lunar cycles. And the rest of us are perhaps unaware of how deeply these things affect our lives. We don't see it. And yet it's a presence in our bloodstream from birth to the grave, always. And now, moving straight into news, we're waiting to hear from the Bill of Rights Defense Committee. We're trying to get Shahid Buttar on today. We talk about a couple of things. One, of course, the rise of the state policy networks and their influence on state legislators, all not this same type of influence, or perhaps to the same degree as Alec. But nonetheless, there's something to watch out for because they're so shadowy, and as only recently, unless one worked specifically in that field or had made it a mission to do and launch investigative reporting projects, taking a look into the state policy network system, basically of extreme hard right, so-called think tanks that are behind even the ALEC legislation, which ALEC drafts. Very often these things, these entities influence what ALEC comes up with. Something worth taking a look at, and indeed it would behoove all of us to keep a close eye on what they're up to. But we'll wait and see if we can get him on the line. It turns out that perhaps coal is not as valuable to Asian markets as it was once presumed to be, stoked by an absolutely unstoppable coal-fired Chinese economy. International demand was soaring. But now we see that Asia was supposed to be the next frontier for oil, for coal production, and a glimmer of hope for sinking industries, since it's certainly no longer the bright light in the energy pantheon here in the United States. In fact, the United States had the best year ever, they say, in history for oil production. But the market is shifting underfoot, and the profitability of these proposed terminals is being called into question. Plans to build terminals near St. Helens, Boardman, and Longview, also Bellingham, Washington, pit the usual adversaries, business offering investment and promising jobs, which never seem to come to light, and taxes, which are usually deferred, are being offered to rural communities versus the environmental end of things. This time, it's a conflict between Oregon and Washington face becoming a conduit for global warming pollution in Asia. So it's even less popular than ever. And again, there's the same pattern as with liquefied natural gas, where it turned out once the ink had dried on all the contracts that maybe those markets were not quite as insatiable as they had at first appeared. Even an executive with Amber Energy, that's of course the Australian company that proposed two coal terminals in the Northwest, said one of the projects would struggle to make a profit at current prices. Probably the other one's probably completely off the books by this time. And again, on the massive energy front, so coal doesn't look so good to Asian markets, but nonetheless, the Alberta's tar sands, which if you look at the pits and the area where this stuff is being mined, it looks like utter desolation. It is steaming, terrifying pits of who knows what, crisscrossed by roads carrying trucks, which, if one seen up close, are in fact enormous themselves. Police arrested 16 protesters late Monday night. Activists had locked themselves to disabled vehicles in front of the megalode in Jaunde. The blockade is the second pulled off by accident, slowing. These things weigh over 900,000 pounds, and they are heading for Alberta via Oregon and Idaho. The load was first blocked on December 1st when two people locked themselves to the truck and had to be extracted by police. Protesters demonstrated at Omega Morgan's Hillsborough headquarters last week, and protest and the obstruction is going to continue in all probability until the megaloads are stopped entirely, if not by the protesters, then in fact by physical obstacles to their movement. They're hauling an evaporator manufactured in Portland to the Athabasca oil fields north of Edmonton. Omega Morgan says that the shipment is the first of three for General Electric, which owns the equipment. And as we mentioned, Omega Morgan is so, so very close to home. It's almost tempting to go and say hi. Could we see some of your big equipment? Two Oregon specialty metal manufacturers have wound up in the dock for over $100,000 in civil fines to resolve federal allegations that they improperly dispose of. Get this. If you think over $800,000 sounds like a lot of money until you consider that the company dumped 160 million pounds of explosive hazardous waste in landfills that weren't equipped for it. One has to wonder what exactly the sort of landfill would be that was equipped to take on 160 million pounds of explosive hazardous waste. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, which settled the case, said that the companies improperly disposed of, this is a byproduct of the manufacturer, something far worse probably. The companies, of course, Oregon Metallurgical of Albany, also known as ORMAT, and TDY Industries of Millersburg, make titanium and zirconium using a process that generates anhydrous magnesium chloride. That stuff reacts extremely violently and is potentially very toxic and flammable. It's a gas, and it performs these antics when it contacts water. Leaving something like that in landfill in Oregon seems particularly ill-advised. The waste went to four landfills in the state that now are being required to do special monitoring. I would say monitoring sounds more like a run like hell situation. The landfills nonetheless are in Wesco County Landfill in the Dells, Findlay Butte. You can look all of this up. We can put all of this information on the KBOO website. Again, something to take note of. And the idea that over $800,000 is going to take care of the situation, I doubt if that would be sufficient to clean up even one of those four landfills. And, of course, we mentioned in the headlines that Oregon's most famous wolf, OR7, is going to be removed from the endangered species list, and then that means it falls to the state to protect the animal. We've utterly destroyed the habitat of the gray wolf and many other predators. When you've destroyed habitat, as many wildlife biologists will tell you, when you destroy habitat, you actually destroy the creature. Anything that's still walking around once its habitat is gone is basically a living fossil. It's already extinct. When the land's gone, the animal is gone. And this is Air Cascadia for Wednesday, December 18th, 2013. Tammy Dean engineered the show today. Thanks so much for that, Tammy. KBOO's AM News and Public Affairs Director is Kathleen Stevenson. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
we're going to do is throw a lot of banana peels around Chicago and have the machine stumble.
I had a dream that the only reason the employers were so powerful was that we were weak.
There's this myth that black people did not resist until Watts or until the Black Panther Party. It's just not true.
Tune In, Turn On, and Remember is a monthly special program on the history of KBOO Community Radio, commemorating KBOO's 45th anniversary year. The last installment of this special series will be on December 24th at 6 p.m. And listen online to the full series at kboo.fm/tunein/turnon.
Flashpoints, a victory for those fighting the building of a massive new military base on the pristine Jeju Island in South Korea. Also, we'll feature an update on the continuing nuclear meltdown at Fukushima. And I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein, and this is your daily investigative news magazine. And we now take it, I think Harvey Wasserman joins us. Are you in Florida, Harvey?
I am indeed, on the Florida Bay, thank God.
Well, we're glad it's still there. Keep an eye on the next oil spill. It's good to have you wherever you are, Harvey. And what we're interested in is keeping abreast of what's going on in terms of Fukushima. We know that they are engaged in a very dangerous, now quite secretive process of